creativity goes beyond a pencil and a paintbrush. Hello, creative people, and welcome to I Am Creative. My name is Hollis Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend your time with us. So what are we doing here? We are really diving into this word creativity and what it means. In all of the conversations that I have had, nobody has ever defined creativity as drawing or painting. People have defined creativity as your soul's essence, that magic spark, how you show up in the world. What my true mission is to really expand this definition and allow people to be able to see themselves in it. Because when people see themselves in this definition, when they've never been told that they fit inside of it, they stand up straighter. They feel like they have something to offer the world and basically are happier humans. So these conversations are structured on three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? So let's just dive right in.
So my inspiring guest for today is Dr. Ryan Joseph Allen. He is a best-selling author, transformational and spiritual coach, and social scientist with a focus on building up minority populations. Ryan has founded and co-founded multiple nonprofit organizations in the greater Cincinnati area and just finished wrapping up his dissertation work, Bridging the Intersection in Spirituality, Trauma, and the LGBTQ plus community from Xavier University. Oh my God, like you're not busy enough. Ryan's main goal is to spread light, love, kindness, and acceptance wherever he steps foot. Wow. Ryan, welcome to the space.
Oh, it's so wonderful to be with you today and spend time with you connecting. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So before we dive into the conversation and learn even more about you, I would love to hear a fun fact that you would like to share about yourself with us.
Oh my gosh, I thought about 10 of them. And I think one of the most fun things that I've done lately is I was swimming in Miami, and all of a sudden I went out to a sandbar. So for context, I was on the beach and I went out to the sandbar and it was pretty far out there. And then all of a sudden a big shark just swims right over and I didn't know what to do. So I just sat there. I was with a friend. My friend was freaking out. I took my friend's hand and I was like, we just can't freak out because they can feel the fear, you know, the animals and, you know, it's an energy. So just don't freak out. Of course, I was trying my best not to freak out. And the shark swam directly towards us, like face to face, and then just turned, right? I mean, had to be like 2 feet from us, turned and swam away. And it was all good and fun. And we swam back to the ocean real quick. And we said, there's a shark out there. And everyone's like, yeah, there's sharks. It's the ocean. And we're like, oh, well, we didn't expect to see a shark up close and personal. And we were actually, the most fun fact about it is that we were at the nude beach. And so I was naked in the ocean with a shark about to eat me alive and had no protection, not even a swimsuit between me and the shark.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if that's a fun fact, but it's definitely like an adventure fact. Like that was the fact that you didn't actually go to the bathroom in the ocean. It's just with the shark coming right at you. Oh my God. I just need a little bit more detail. Like, was this a big shark?
No, it was probably only like 6 to 8 feet long. So it wasn't ginormous, but
that's
it was big.
Long. Yes.
Was big enough to frighten us, and I don't think I've ever went that far out in the ocean since, without knowing, you know, where I was at, like being in like the Caribbean or something, and being able to like see really far out, you know, like 25-30 feet out, so I can be monitoring what's going on. But yeah, it was fun. I don't know if that's a fun fact about me, but that was like a fun story. So
yes,
yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And that's, I definitely respect the ocean. I respect fish live there. And I can personally look at the ocean and put my feet in it. But I totally understand that it's their home. So, oh my gosh, that was, thank you for opening us up with that, because we're just going to then dive right in to the question, which is, how do you define creativity?
Yeah, so creativity to me looks so different. So today, what it looked like for me is I woke up feeling, I don't know, I wasn't having like a horrible off day. I know we all wake up, you know, like on the wrong side of the bed, but I woke up in like the middle of the bed. You know, I wasn't like feeling super great. And I wasn't feeling bad. And I kind of that feeling lingered throughout the day. And so I just realized at one point, I said, I'm staying right now in the city, so in downtown, and walking to the park, and there's garbage everywhere. And I just thought, I'm going to start picking up this garbage and throwing it in the trash can. And then I found a bag, a piece of garbage that was a bag. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to fill this whole bag with garbage. And what I realized was that in that moment, I was being very present. And that pulled me back to my center. And so sometimes creativity looks as simple as doing something off the beaten course, like something maybe you wouldn't do every single day. Maybe you do it once in a while. Like I pick up trash maybe once a month, so I don't do it every day. And so doing something creative for me means like pivoting from the normal course of your day or moment. And I think there's so many ways to do that. And so that's one simple way. But I think also what I like to call heartstorming with other folks, which is like similar to brainstorming, but with your hearts wide open. And so you're less in your mind and more in your heart. You're more in like deep, authentic, real connection. And when you get into that space, it feels like the answers just come from the universe, from the other person, from the connection itself, from your own kind of inner knowing. And I think creative solutions happen from that. Innovation happens from that. New ideas. Maybe you've done something a while the same way. You know, I walked that path to the park the last week, every day almost. And I could notice the garbage. But today I decided, let's do something different than what I was doing. And maybe that would help me in some way or the other. Or maybe it wouldn't help me, but at least I would feel like I was doing something. But what I realized was is getting myself out of the mindset of the normalcy, right? And also doing that with someone. So my partner was with me today and we heartstormed really well together. And that was actually something we thought about. We said, what's a way that we can change up our walk today? And we were like, oh, let's pick up this garbage and that we've been noticing all week. And on the way back from our walk, we noticed like there's so much less garbage. Like it's so much of a nicer walk. And so how many other people now are going to get to experience that? And so creativity doesn't have to look like sitting behind an art studio, right? Like creativity can just be following instinct and following intuition and creating something with other people. Like it's like a part of the, it's creation, right? It's creativity, creation. They're, one and the same in some ways. And so I think that's really important to share. And I do think I would love to back up a minute and share before heartstorming, because I think sometimes it's easy to say, well, I could heartstorm with myself in meditation or whatever. But if you're going to heartstorm with people, I like to find people that are not like-minded necessarily. They can be, they don't have to be, but I like them to be like-hearted. And so for me, the difference between the two is that like-minded means we all think the same. We have the same ideologies. We have the same yeses and nos and maybes, right? But people that are like-hearted are people maybe that see the world differently than me, that have had different life experiences, different traumas, different triumphs. But we can sit together in a room or walk down the street and connect on a deeper level. And it's a true heart-centered connection. And I think, to me, that's when creativity flows the most. That's when I can get into my heartstorming mode, because that heartstorming mode is how I create in the world. And like I said, I can do that by myself, like in meditation and deep meditation or thought, prayer, meditation, whatever, connection with Mother Nature is big for me. I get a lot of my answers, a lot of my solutions, a lot of my creation and through that. But I also love it with people, with deep connection with people. And so I think that heart connection, like I like to call it like-hearted, right? Because I don't want to always be around the people that think the same as me. I want to be able to be around folks that challenge me, that push me to be creative in ways that maybe I didn't think about before.
Wow. Thank you for all of that. And I think that is so many things of what I heard from what you said was authenticity, connection, inner knowing, innovation, and like-hearted. I really love that differentiation in that because it's true. If we surround ourselves by people who are like-minded, I love this kind of concept. Because yes, we're comfortable. Oh yeah, you know, we think the same way. We do the same things. We da-da-da-da. But it's so safe. I mean, this is where you, when you're connecting from heart, people can be all different colors, all different abilities, all different, you know, from all different places, from there isn't that, you're not in a box, but there's that heart, there's that kindness, there's that connection, there's that spirituality, there's that deep connection, which so many deeper conversations come from that.
Yeah, and looping in my shark story, I don't know why I shared that 100%. I had like 1,000 things I could have said, but I do think the reminder for myself that energy is powerful. If an animal can feel that, and I think plants can feel that. I think the environment around us can feel that. Other people can definitely feel that.
Definitely.
And so I think that's where that like-hearted nature comes from, because it also doesn't mean that we have to be on the same, maybe I'm having a rough day and maybe the other person's having the best day of their life or vice versa, but it doesn't mean you can't connect to the heart and still have some type of creativity that flourishes from that. And I like that because it's like meeting people where they're at and also allowing yourself to be met where you're at. Mm. There's no, and I think sometimes when you're thinking like-minded, I think for me, an extension of like-minded is like energy, right? So like, I have to only connect with other people that are really, really positive or other people that have been through the same things as me or whatever. And I think when we do that, we hold ourselves in a certain spot where creativity can only flow in kind of rigidly. And it's hard to learn and grow without having those other experiences. So I think when I think like-hearted, it's way deeper than just finding someone that I connect with the heart. I mean, I think it's also allowing for differences, right? Whereas like-minded doesn't allow for as many differences, even if it's just energetic differences of,
yes,
like I said, someone having a good day and someone not, but being able not to connect with them. Like, I think my ultimate goal is to walk into a room and be able to connect with anybody at any given moment and have empathy, have kindness, have compassion, have deep conversation, have, maybe you don't even get to converse with someone. Maybe it's just a simple hug. There's so many ways to communicate and connect. And so I think there's something here to the heart connection and heart-centered approach and being like-hearted that really opens us up to all kinds of avenues for things to flow in. And to me, that is creativity, right? Because then you're outside of your shell of what's normal. And then you can get creative. You can think about things differently. You can look at things different. It's like a different lens kind of goes over your sunglasses, and you get to see something different every time you connect to someone's heart.
Yeah. So freaking powerful. Okay. So much about you, Ryan. I know this is kind of a broad question when I ask you this, but wherever you want to start, please tell us about you and how you got to where you are, especially with like what I read in your bio, bridging the intersection in spirituality, trauma, and the LGBTQ plus community. It's just, there's so much that has gone on in your life up to this point. Everybody always has stuff, but you really have a lot of stuff that has happened. I would just love for you to share wherever you want to start the story and take us to now, please.
Yeah. So I'll just start when I was really little, like 3 or 4 years old. I always loved arts and crafts. And it was funny because all the other boys around me, all the other guys around me, grown men and younger guys, they liked sports and video games and other things. And I do think that there's creativity in those. So I will just pop that caveat in there. I think there's can be creativity in all things. But I was really creative, like hands-on, visual. I loved to talk about feelings and I loved affection. And I was just different than the other guys around me. And so as I got a little bit older, about by the age of 6, I had my first thoughts of like ending my life, which sounds really dark, but it was. I went through a dark time from the time I was 6 years old to the time I was 22 or so. And I found myself self-loathing. And there were many aspects to that. One was feeling different than the people around me. My gender norms were like different than the folks around me, especially men. And then I started realizing I was part of the LGBTQ plus community when I was in my early double digits. So like 10, probably maybe before that. And gosh, I really started like this self-loathing journey. And I started then using drugs and alcohol, and I started self-mutilation, and I had started, I shouldn't say I started body dysmorphia, but I started experiencing body dysmorphia in that time too. And so there were all of these things. I found comfort in food and drugs and alcohol and sex, or I guess it wasn't even just like the act of sex, but like promiscuousness, just risky situations, self-destructive behaviors. Like that was like totally, that's what gave me my shits and giggles to curse on here. But anyway, by the time I was 22, I was in a relationship with my daughter's mother. So I have a 12-year-old daughter, and we were engaged. She got pregnant. During this time, I had been on and off opioids, for years. But I was really like self-medicating consistently with drugs and alcohol just from the time I was young. You know, I started experimenting when I was 12 and really started like super self-medicating when I was probably like 16 or so, 15 maybe. But anyway, I got to this place where I found out my I was going to have a daughter. And so I stopped cold turkey. I was like, I'm not doing anything. And of course, then what still was there was the self-loathing, right? Like the hate for myself, this hiding of myself. I was still in the closet. I'd only come out to a few people at that point, including my daughter's mother, but it was important for her, for me not to tell people. So I honored that. Cause that was, you know, what I know now, I maybe wouldn't have done that, but where I was at then, I didn't know what else to do. So my daughter was born. You would think, oh, everything's going to be great. Well, everything was pretty good for a couple months. But we started fighting real bad, me and her mom. And then I started using just marijuana again. Like, so I would smoke weed, kind of not, you know, every day like I was, but most of the time, you know, every other day or whatever. And then I just realized one day, we got in a really bad fight, and I realized, like, I can't live my life like this any longer. So I have to come out. I have to leave her, like break up with her, because we were in this abusive cycle. And that was pretty much the whole time of our relationship. I said, my daughter's going to grow up with two unhappy parents. Like one unhappy parent makes an unhappy child, but two definitely makes an unhappy child. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I can't just, if I really love her the way I do, which I do, I have to do this for myself so that I can be happy, so that she doesn't have to suffer. So I know sometimes people say, I did it for my kids. And it's like, so yes, I did it for her, but I also did it because I knew I had to, because I wouldn't be able to be the human I was supposed to be. Well, and that sounds great, but what happened when I came out was that, you know, I fell into a wrong crowd, to a crowd that was, you know, drinking, smoking, partying. And then I happened to come across an old friend from middle school. We started doing opioids, pain pills every day for months. And I found myself deep in a deeper hole than I ever had felt before. And I didn't think it could have gotten any deeper. And so one day, it was the day before my 22nd birthday, I sat in my car and this song came on the radio. It was, funny enough, it was like an Evanescence song or something, but you know, the words I immediately saw my daughter. Now I was high, but I was high all the time. So this wasn't like I was just like seeing things because I was high. But I just saw my daughter singing me this song as an adult. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I don't stop this, like stop the opioids, stop the drugs, stop everything, you know, these things, I'm going to end up dead in jail, addicted. I mean, not going to be present. And she's going to suffer. Like the song was like heart-wrenching as I listened to it through like her singing it. I thought, oh my gosh, she feels this way. One of the reasons why, maybe the main reason, is because her dad wasn't here. And like my dad wasn't really here for me. He lived a few hours away. And so I thought, oh my gosh, if I want to end this cycle of feeling like dads don't show up or whatever, then I have to start with me. And like, I have to do this work. And so of course I said that day, I'm going to stop opioids. I'm going to stop all drugs and alcohol. Well, I did well with opioids seemingly, but of course the next day I was smoking weed and drinking it. Almost because I didn't go to a formal rehab or anything. It was like how I was kind of weaning myself off. And like I said, I'm not a doctor in addiction treatment. And so I wouldn't say what to do and what not to do, but I think everyone's journey is different. And for me, it was too hard just to stop everything at once. So I couldn't do that. But sorry, this is all getting to be a long story, but about 2 months after that, I was sitting there with my drug dealer of all people. Her name's Marie, and we were talking about God. Well, and to back up a little bit, I was like having like a really depressive episode. I was like laying in bed and barely couldn't get up. And she came over and brought some weed and alcohol. So we were, she's like, oh, perk you up. And so whatever. So we were like hanging out. So my drug dealer was also my friend, but she was also still my drug dealer. And, we had never really talked about like spirituality or God or anything, but she brought up God. She said, you know, what does like hope look like to you? What does believing in like something look like to you? And I was like, I don't know. Like, you know, I had this moment a couple months ago where I, you know, and like was dabbling in like these spiritual moments, but I was way too in my trauma and my addiction to really understand it. And she just essentially said, like, we got to the crux of the conversation was she said, you know, God loves everyone, right? Like God loves you just the way you are. And I don't know if I ever heard those words, or if I had heard them, I didn't, my religious trauma from my youth and things like that, from hearing that gay people go to hell and all of those things, like I just blocked out anything that God could love me, right? And I started to understand God could look different than what I was taught to by formal religion. And so in this moment, though, something really powerful happened. And I said, yeah, I always believed in God ever since I was really little. I mean, I was like 3 years old and like I wanted to go to church. 5 years old, I would like choose to go to church. And it wasn't necessarily for the sermon because I don't think I could understand it at that age. But it was for like the energy of the people coming together and singing and like, I just felt something like I believed in God ever since I was really little. I had this deep connection, but then I lost it over time, right? Because I had heard God hated me, or that's what my interpretation of that was. I'm gay, or I'm LGBTQ plus, whatever that looks like. And so God doesn't, I don't have a place anymore. And I heard that from her though, that God loves everyone. I was like, whew.
Yeah.
I went to my bathroom. After she left, I fell on my knees. I asked God to save my life because I said, I need help. Like, I've stopped the opioids, but like, I'm not going to survive this still. Like, I'm not doing well. And it took a few months still, but I eventually had another moment where, you know, God came and talked to me actually and just said, like, you have to stop all of this. Like, you have to stop drinking and drugging and all the things. You have to have a clear mind. To do the work you're going to do in the world. And at that point, I call that my big shift, because I had these little shifts along the way, but I had this big shift moment, which is so funny because I'd never heard of the movie The Shift by Wayne Dyer, Dr. Mm-hmm. Wayne Dyer. But the next day after this happened, what did I find? The movie The Shift by Dr. Wayne. It was just sitting right there. And so I watched it, and it was like the experience I'd had the day before. I was like, this is exactly what happened to me and what's been happening to me. And then I started to really, the world looked different. I stopped smoking and drinking and for a few months, of course. And then I had about a year where I was like dabbling, but But I had a few 3 months where you know, 2 or 3 months where I like didn't do anything, and the world had like a different vibrancy to it. Everything changed. Like my body changed, even like my physical appearance changed. I had asthma my whole life. I was using like one albuterol inhaler a week, which is 200 puffs, which is like a lot.
Oh my gosh.
Using one for every 6 months or something, you know, like even my internal, and it probably was the smoking. Let's not lie. Right. But it also was like, I felt like I got a whole new body, like a whole new chance at a life. And so I had a year where it was kind of, you know, dabbled here or there, things like that. But then I found a couple spiritual practices. One was called the School of Metaphysics, and that taught like world religions, meditations, mindfulness practices, things like that. And then one was called Oneness, which was a hands-on healing practice out of India. And I found both of those around the same time and right around when I was getting sober, like completely sober. And God started doing crazy things in my life, right? Like some of them were little things like getting a stable job and making sure, you know, because at this point, right, when I was in the depths of my opioid addiction, I lost my living situation. I was just renting an apartment, but I didn't get evicted, but I almost did. And I almost lost my car. And I was, you know, at time lived in my car. Anyway, really found like building my life back up to some way. And I almost got kicked out of college, but some miracle I did it. And so I finished my undergrad and eventually went back and got a master's degree. But halfway through my master's degree, I was called to help start this nonprofit called Love Must Win. And the whole time I was in my master's degree, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I thought I was supposed to be doing clinical counseling or therapy or early childhood education. But I was called to a master's of business administration. I was like, I don't want anything to do with business. Like that is not what tickles my fancy. But what happened was, as during that process of being in that program, I was able to then to help me and a couple friends start a nonprofit. And so I knew I was there for a reason, right? To learn skills and abilities so I could do certain things. So I started a nonprofit with a couple people called Love Must Win. And then from there, I helped co-found multiple other nonprofits and things like that, bridging the gap kind of with people in recovery, trauma, LGBTQ plus folks that, you know, have experienced, you know, either all kinds of traumas, right? But even, you know, the spiritual and religious trauma piece. And I think that's what inspired me to go into a doctoral degree around leadership studies. Because I was looking at, really, I started that program thinking, oh, I really want to investigate more nonprofit leadership. And that evolved into really learning about trauma. And I did my dissertation on post-traumatic spiritual growth. So we looked at like folks who had experienced religious trauma. And then we looked at their pivot points. So the points in their life, the shifts, those shift moments that I was talking about for myself. And then looked at where they grew beyond that. And that work to me was really fascinating. And during that time, I was writing a book. So I have a book called My Drug Dealer Brought Me to God. It just talks about my life and talks about spirituality. It's kind of like a hybrid between a memoir and a self-help. It's something in the middle between the two. And there's a workbook in it. And it's not meant to be as self-helpy as a self-help book, but it's not meant to be as memoir-y as a memoir. So anyway, it's kind of in between.
I love that hybrid.
Yeah, hybrid. And I wrote that right at the same time I was writing my dissertation and doing my research, which was a lot. But what I was really interested in with my research was looking at other people, like Brené Brown would say, when she talks about resiliency, for instance, she would say, okay, so resiliency is like a bounce back to normalcy, right? So you had some trauma that happened, some big event, and now you're back to normal. Like that's resiliency, bouncing back. But the step beyond the bounce back is this post-traumatic growth. And that looks like, where does it go beyond that, right? Like, where is there a pivot point beyond the growth, or like beyond the growth back to resiliency? Because I would argue that's still a growth, but then there's a growth beyond that, like the next step in the process. And that looks like our teachers, our, you know, spiritual leaders, our community activists, our And these people don't have to be people that are on the front line like that. You could be a poet and not even share your poetry with a single soul. But it's taking your trauma, your experiences, and then doing something else with it, right? And that's kind of the intersection with creativity. It's like, how can I be creative with my trauma and turn it into something, allow it to be kind of my superhero? Mm-hmm. And that in itself is creative. But then also, like, a lot of times what we saw in the research was that folks use creativity in some way, shape, or form, right? Storytelling, activism, advocacy, you know, those pieces to kind of expand on what they learned throughout their process to help other people, to like ripple it out into the community or world. Though there were a few people in my research, and I'm sure there's many more, that had the post-traumatic growth, but they were still in the phase of how do I put this out into the world? Like, I know I have my book of poetry, but how do I share that? Or do I even want to share that? And we still consider that like post-traumatic growth, because even if they didn't take it out into the world and create some type of ripple, they still were creating ripples in their own life energetically. And, you know, even just talking about, I write poetry, even if they never share the poetry, it inspires other people to get outside their comfort zone and maybe possibly do that as well. So I could talk forever. So I'll let you ask questions or check in. Sorry.
So much. But what you just said, okay, creating ripples in your own life energetically, I think that's an important thing for people to hear. Because I really appreciate what you said of, well, maybe they didn't follow through and do this or follow through and do that. But when you have ideas, when you say them out loud, when you speak them, when you're that poet and maybe doesn't tell other people, but you write the poetry, it has a ripple effect. It just does. Because it went from your mind and it's out of your body in whatever form that it's out, which creates an energetic vibration. And then there is some kind of cause and effect. So even for the fact of just making you a happier individual because you got it out of your body. And then eventually it's like that much better when you connect with someone on a heart-centered level. And then maybe you find out somebody else writes poetry and you never really talked about it, but you're like, I write poetry too. There's kind of a like-mindedness, but it's not coming from that. It's coming from more of this, just this heart. They could be from anywhere. It's this heart connection. And it just builds. It's the vibration. It's just putting it out and putting it out. And talk about that title of My Drug Dealer Brought Me to God. I mean, it's kind of like you were being guided almost along this whole way. It's being open to these signs and this awareness of just this awareness, even when you're not fully lucid or you're fully, but you're kind of like getting these breadcrumbs. And it's just so incredible to see just how I just really, the story is, I could listen for hours because everything that you're saying is just resonating so strongly. And I think it's an important, it's things that don't always get spoken about. And you're tying it in so beautifully with this word creativity. And this is exactly what I'm doing in this space, is expanding the definition of what the word means. We're not drawing and painting here, everybody. But what we are doing is, your life is a canvas. And you get to choose what goes on it. Whether it's paint, whether it's pictures, whether it's words, whether it's whatever it is, you get to choose the canvas for the day.
Yeah, it's almost like a vision board, but it's not just a vision board. It's like the things you end up doing, and it's not even doing. It could be the things you end up being. Not in the traditional sense of like, I'm going to be a physician or I'm going to be a writer or whatever. I'm talking about being present with yourself, being present with others, being present with Mother Nature, being present with divine, whatever that might look like. Like for me, I use the word spirit, source, oneness, creator, God, Gaia, universal energy, love. And so even for like my agnostic and atheist friends, it's like, we use the word love and we can talk about, to me, that is some type of energy or feeling or connection that is universal between all religion, spirituality, cultures, etc. And so, gosh, it's fascinating when you are able to spend time in that energy, though, and time in that connection with love, divine, God, source, spirit, oneness, too, because that is a being that isn't, I think in this world, we're taught to do, right? So like the only way to create is to do, to paint on the canvas, to write the poem, to write the book, to sculpt the sculpture. But to me, I feel like some of my best creativity happens when I'm simply just being present. When I'm being present, and that could be, like I said, with Mother Nature or God or my partner or a friend or myself, my dog. But really being present. And there's a difference. It's easy to sit. Today, I just sat in the park, was doing a meditation, and it was so easy. I picked up my phone because I was like, oh, I'm going to check this or do this. I wasn't being present. I had to remind myself, like, just be present in this moment. It's beautiful. It's an 80-degree day in the first week of, or I guess it's the second week now of November. Like, who even thought, you know, it could be that beautiful? The wind was blowing. The leaves were beautiful and falling all around. And it's like, just be present. And in that moment, I feel like that was creativity, because it would have been easy to get sucked into my phone, into the world of Facebook or messages or emails or phone, whatever. And in that moment, I made a choice to stay present, because now when I close my eyes, I can literally see the image of the leaves blowing and all the colors and the sun peeking through and my feet on the ground, on the all the acorns that were all there and the dead branches that were where my hands were touching or that my legs could feel and the leaves crunching beneath me. And if I wasn't present in that moment, I wouldn't have been able to go back to that memory. And so even like our day-to-day moments can be creative, because now I'm trying to create a feeling for some. Say I was creating a workshop and I wanted to create this feeling of fall. Well, now I could like dip it back into my memory, into my memory of this moment I was being real present, and say, how can I help them feel this crunch of the leaves and the beautiful colors and the moment of connection with the sun peeking through and shining? And if I wasn't present in that moment, I wouldn't have that reference back to, yes, to that moment I had to help recreate it maybe for someone else, or maybe to, you know, do something with it. So, you know, maybe I do want to paint. I mean, it's like a painting in my mind. And so it sounds really abstract or like esoteric, but like,
oh, I get it.
To me, it's not, the creativity isn't just what I can put out into the world, but it's my inner thoughts. It's my own pictures I put in my mind, things I choose to, you know, the world I want to live in, right? I want to live in a world more of like that experience I was having today than what's going on outside my window right now, which is cars going up and down the street and people littering or whatever, whatever you'd see when you walk out. And maybe that could be beautiful too, but I want to paint those pictures in my mind of that. And if I wasn't present in that moment, I wasn't being, then I wouldn't have that image in my mind, that experience that I can dig into. And I think can also be the launch pad for other things. Maybe later today, I decide I want to record a meditation and make it about the fall day and falling into autumn and whatever. But that wouldn't be able to have that creative experience if I wasn't present in the prior moment. Yes. So anyway, that's I'll yeah.
No, it's a beautiful point to make. And it's funny, the more I've been, so being back in the classroom now for a little bit, for a while, I've always said, but I'm finding myself reiterating again with, this is high school age, of just saying, do not live up here. You are not creating from your headspace right now, because then you're getting stuck in overanalyzing. You're getting stuck in, can I do this? I'm not good at it. Da, da, da. Really come from your heart space and just like go from there. And if it's not working out the way you want, then we'll pivot and we'll turn and we'll figure it out. But don't live in the headspace, because then you will not do anything. Even this one project that we were doing today with creating your own business and brainstorming what that could be. And I tried to have them go in and find out more about who they are. Do they like being around people? Do they like being inside? Do they like being outside? Do they like a certain time of year? Do they like something to just learn more about them? Not somebody, which is so annoying to come up and say, what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know. It's like when you're that age, even when you're an adult, you're often like, I don't know. But it's like, let me find out more about me and hone into me, tune in, go inwards to me. So then this one kid, then I was like, okay, now we're literally brainstorm vomiting. Like, we're just like getting it out of us and come up with the most ridiculous things. And this one kid said, can I create a business that's total fantasy? Like potions and outer space. And I'm like, yes. Like, yes. It's almost like, you know, it's see a need, fill a need, and use your imagination. Like, just go free with that. And when you have permission to do that, I've seen it over and over and over again. When from the perspective of me, now I call myself a creativity doula, guiding people to birth their stories, but being an art teacher for 30 some years. And for me, when I give myself permission and give others permission, then it's like the floodgates are open. Like, I can make mistakes. It's not going to be perfect. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, that's a free pass to just kind of like let it go and then be present in the moment. Like, everything that you're saying, everybody, again, hear these words. Like, it's easy to say, but it's not easy to do.
Right. Even finding myself in that moment in the day when you can decide to be present or to like check out almost. And sometimes it's like a conscious choice. Sometimes I think we do it unconsciously, but it's like, sometimes when that choice comes up, sometimes I'm like, I want to check out. And it's about showing up for yourself too. And I think self-care comes into this as well. And we're talking about creativity, even creativity, but I think everything that we do in life, like, we have to balance it with taking care of ourselves and finding avenues to take care of ourselves. And I think the physical arts are definitely a great way to do that. But like I said, I think there's other ways, other creative ways to take care of ourselves too. And that's where creativity isn't, it's funny, the word, you know, if you brought it up to most folks, they would probably say, oh yeah, like art or like being creative, coming up with different solutions. But it's like way deeper than that. It's like way more expansive. It really kind of encompasses like almost anything that could be a topic in the world could really kind of fall to some way be related back to creativity. And so I think for me, it's finding even creative solutions to self-care.
This is perfect. I'm going to stop you right there, because I'm officially going to ask you, because that is the second question, which is, how do you incorporate more creativity into your own life? Take it from there.
Yeah, I think you could do it in every single aspect of it. I think even like, I'm thinking about even when you take a shower and you, like most people, I think, have like a routine to do the same thing every time or near the same thing, you know, whatever. And it's like, what could I do different today? Could I like put on some music, or could I dance in the shower for 30 seconds? Well, be careful dancing in the shower, but you know, whatever.
right.
But you know, do something different. You know, maybe I'll, instead of, I don't know, you know, doing this or this, I'll change up and do something different. I don't know. I think even just things like that, like changing things up, and maybe you just found the most expedient way to get things done the fastest way possible. But I would just say, like, if you're feeling like that kind of like bore in life, or that kind of like draggishness, I don't know the right word, the draggy energy, that kind of like, ugh, things like that can help. Even just changing up our routines in a creative way. Maybe even changing the time of day you shower or whatever, or get ready or whatever you know have to do. So I think for me, I'm thinking about all the ways in my life I can be creative, including even, you know, what we were chatting about right before this was, you know, the self-care piece. Like, how can I be creative in my self-care to really make sure that I'm taking care of me so I can help others, right? Because I think that's kind of my mission. Ever since I was little, people would say, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? And I'd be like, you know, and I came up with the answers. I said a lawyer, a politician, a weatherman. That was the longest lasting one was weatherman, which was part of my undergrad degree. But anyway, not that you can get a degree in weatherman, but meteorology was part of my undergrad. But anyway, it's like, goodness, we don't have to pick something, you know. That's why I'm saying, like, being is really, like, just being present is really, like, showing up in the world. But anyway, you know, they say, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? But I always said, I just want to help people. Just want to help people. And then people would say, well, what does that mean? And so then I came up with all these ways, right? Because I thought, if I was a politician, I could change policy. If I'm a lawyer, I could help people that are in trouble. If I'm a weather person, I could help them stay, you know, prepared for the weather, help them in a severe storm or whatever. So my goal was always to help people in some way, shape, or form. And helping people, right, in the nonprofit world or in the form, whatever, you know, whatever you're doing in life, I think we have to balance that with, how do I take care of myself? Because if I'm not taking care of myself, I'm not able to show up for others. If I'm not, like, doing the basic, my basic needs are met. Like, my basic needs to be need to be met. And then also, you know, I think there's creative ways to pamper ourselves. And pamper ourselves doesn't have to look like going to get a manicure, pedicure, massage. It could, but maybe you can't afford that.
Tell us what those are. Give us some specifics. Yeah. Like, for you, what does that mean? Creative ways to pamper yourself.
You know, for me today, it was finding a creative solution to kind of feeling like in the dumps a little bit. I was like, let's pick up some garbage, which I don't know. Some people, that might make them feel worse. I don't know, but that's just something for me.
Yeah.
Every time I go and pick up garbage outside, I feel tremendously better. And I know it sounds silly, but if I'm having one of those days where I'm like, I don't even know what my purpose is, I don't even know what I'm doing here on earth, if I go pick up garbage, I promise you, I end up by the end of the day remembering part of my purpose.
Yeah.
And remembering that simple things like that are it would be so easy to say, well, there's people that get hired to do that, or volunteers do that, or whatever, make an excuse. But, like, for me, when I just show up and be present, then I can connect then again with what my purpose is. So I think simple things like that, like today I did an extra meditation because I wasn't feeling the best. It's doing things I know, like, for me personally, like, I love grounding outside. So putting my feet on the ground, barefoot, walking, hiking, being connected to the tree, you know, the trees and nature. So I'll go outside and hug trees. I literally hug trees. And I promise you, people, like, they made up this term tree hugger, which I think is funny. But actually, if you go out and hug a tree, just do it with an open mind. Go out and hug a tree.
Oh, it's real.
Big tree. Because you'll, I presume most people, when you really clear out your mind, you'll feel something. Maybe you just feel a little calmer. Maybe you get an idea that you didn't have. Maybe if you're big into prayer or meditation, you can pray and meditate as you hug the tree. But you will receive something from it. I can almost guarantee. And I do. So those are the things I do for self-care. I mean, I'll, you know, every now and again, I'll pop on a movie. Like, the other night I watched a movie from my childhood, a very off-brand, weird movie most people haven't heard of, called Princess and the Goblin.
Yeah, I never heard of that one.
Very odd movie. I don't know why. It's very... Anyway, I pulled up on YouTube and watched it. But, like, you know, I was like, I needed that nostalgia. So nostalgia can help us to self-care. Food, you know, like, we have to eat to live. But, like, eating can be a celebratory experience. It can also be something that grounds us back into ourselves. It can also be a piece of our self-care. And that looks like, for me, multiple sides of that, right? Like, if I'm taking care of myself, I'm not going to go, like, I might feel in the moment like, oh my gosh, I want to eat 2 large pizzas or something. That would be a lot of pizza, but I could eat it. But that might not be taking care of me. But, you know, allowing myself to have a few pieces of pizza, like, that's great. Like, knowing my body to say, what do I need? Like, what do I need? You know, maybe yesterday I took a real long hike, so maybe today I need more. Like, self-care is very vast. I mean, it's the basic necessities that we have to have, right? Like, food, shelter, clothing, type of things, but it's the things beyond that as well. But you can't skip out on any layer of it, for me at least. In my self-care, I can't skip out on any layer, including, like, for me, I have to be physically active in some way, shape, or form and I don't love going to the gym. So I'm like walking all the time, or mm-hmm. Hiking, or finding ways to be active still, you know, in an indoor space if I'm not able to be outside. But doesn't have to look just like going to the gym, right? I might go to the rock climbing gym, which to me shouldn't be called gym. It should be rock climbing like palace or something, because it's so fun there. It's not like to me. And some people think the gym's fun, but it's just in my mind, I don't think the gym is fun. So I don't, you know, anyway. Great. So like the balance, right? Like finding what works and what doesn't. Anyway, so for me, I think it's really like a tiered system, right? Like, you know, Mike Maslow's hierarchy of needs kind of thing, really. Like I have to meet my basic needs and then kind of go up from there. Mm-hmm. But for me, I can't skip meditating. I have to meditate for 15, 20 minutes every day. It's very, very, very rare I miss a day. Maybe a few times a year I miss a day. But for me, that's like a necessity. So I put that in my necessity. So most people would say, well, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like those spiritual needs are at the top, the spiritual, religion, whatever, is up at the very top of the pyramid. But for me, it's the basis of my pyramid. So I think that for me is like a good insight to share, that you can figure out what your needs are. They might look different than just food, shelter, clothing. It might look like, for me, I always laugh and say, I'm getting meditated instead mm-hmm. of medicated. But in all honesty, part of your pyramid might be medication. Like if you need to be on medication for physical health or mental health, like that's a need. It's not like if I can, you know, whatever. Yeah. I think in this world, it's, you know, I'm always one to say like, there's so many avenues to healing and growth and for physical health, mental health, and all the things. But I think it's important that we acknowledge that, you know, everyone's needs look different outside of kind of those basic needs. But to other people, they, like to my partner, for instance, he might say, oh, I need to meditate like once a week to stay balanced. It was pretty accurate for him, twice a week, three times, whatever. But for me, it's like every day, sometimes multiple times, and that's a need. So everyone's, it's good if you know the people around you. That helps, I think, because then you can come up with creative solutions too. Like if I know my partner, and I know, oh, maybe he's feeling a little down, like, let's do a little meditation together, or let's go for a walk together and not talk about any work stuff, because we're in the middle of a big entrepreneurial endeavor. And that's what we talk about like 9 out of 10 times out of the day. But it's like, let's intentionally talk about something else. Let's talk about something you're going, you know, something you're feeling, or he just had a birthday. So it's like, well, maybe how are you feeling about, you know, getting 1 year older? We actually like forget our ages. People ask us our age. I literally forget. He does too. We just kind of live outside of like normal norms like that. But anyway, it's like, well, how does that make, like talking about something else, or, you know, maybe I can tell like that doesn't make him feel good. So let's talk about whatever his favorite ice cream flavors and why. And if when he was little, was it different than now? And And that's a creative way to find a solution to like talking about the same thing over and over again, right? Or shifting someone out of a space that they might be in, you know, like it could be a negative space or a neutral space, but how do we bring people to somewhere else? And I think creative conversations can definitely do that. So I love that. That's, you know, kind of at the crux of what you're doing here is creating creative conversations.
That's exactly what I'm doing. That was my old name and I changed it to I Am Creative to keep it all on brand, but that's what we are doing. And I can't believe we're getting to the top of the hour, which is nuts. So we're going to wrap it up with our third and final question, which is, and it sounds a little repetitive, but it's kind of like putting the bow in the box, which is, why do you think creativity is important?
Oh my goodness. Because I think it's everything we just talked about. It's like, it stems from the basic kind of needs of life, like these needs that we have, our self-care, to our partnerships and our relationships, to our connections, to our spirituality, or, you know, belief systems, to deep connection and communication with other folks, to ways to navigate trauma, right? I don't like to say heal trauma because I don't know if that's even possible, but what we can do is navigate it and heal parts of ourselves for sure. And so, but I think it's all of those pieces, right? Like you can't see me on video, but like, I'm like making like circles all around because I'm like, it's a full circle. Like,
yeah,
it's not just one area. It's easy. It would be easy to say, it's just this, you know, it's just creating something. It's just a conversation or it's just this or that, but it's really not, it's really everything. And when we're able to have avenues for that, for creativity in those areas, like how am I creative with my partner? How am I creative in communication? How am I creative in my spirituality? How am I creative with my self-care? How am I creative with the work I do in the world? How am I creative with even my kiddo, right? You know, she's 12 and like, she's kind of a rambunctious kid at times. And so like, I don't even like the word discipline, but how do I guide her in certain ways? Like I have to get creative in my, the ways I deal with situations with her. She has ADD and ADHD, which is pretty, it's rarely diagnosed in women though. It's common. It's just as common as with boys, but, so that's good to know, right? Because then I know that I can get creative with my solutions on how I approach dealing with situations and handling situations. And and even with my dogs, like it's like, what's a creative solution with for my dog? Like maybe they're, I don't know, this or that or whatever. It's like, what solution can I come up with that's maybe outside of the box of normalcy? And I think that's the biggest piece is like, how can we think differently? And that's why I can say that like-hearted folks, if we can surround ourselves with like-hearted folks for conversations like this, but don't have to be like-minded, just like-hearted, then we can find avenues to different things, to solutions. Really, it's like the gateway to all solutions are there. And we might not be able to do it all, right? Because like I might have a solution to how to heal or how to help with world hunger, but I might not be able to do that all myself, but at least I can come up with some ideas and then maybe I can take that to a city council meeting or maybe I can do this or maybe I can get a group of people to do something or help or maybe I just tell the people my idea and then my idea somehow makes it somewhere to make and even just energetically, like we talked about, like we don't have to maybe even, you know, speak it to a certain person for it to get out there. Maybe we just energetically speak it out into the world and it creates the ripples. So I think It's all of these things. It's the ripples. It's the communication. It's the empathy. It's the kindness. It's the help. Like, how can I help? How can I be of service? It's all of these things and so much more.
Woo! So as we know, we could go on and on and on. And I love asking that third question because it just kind of builds on itself. So it kind of goes full circle, but then often goes that much more expansion to that much more expansion. So Ryan, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, you can find me on all like social medias and things, or simply my website, ryanjosephallen.com, or my drug dealer brought me to god.com. And that has my social media and stuff on there as well, including email and all that good stuff.
Perfect. Ryan, thank you so much for spending this hour chatting. So inspiring.
It's a pleasure, and I really appreciate what you're doing in the world. And stay creative, everyone. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, everybody.
I believe these conversations have always been important, but now I think that they are more important than ever. Please like, follow, share. Spread the goodness because people really need to hear these messages in order to be able to see themselves in them, in order to be able to hear these people's stories, in order to be able to expand their thinking. It is so important to really understand that creativity is life and everybody has creativity within them. To find out more about what we offer, go to iamcreativephilly.com. And you will see that there are services from publishing multi-author and solo books, kits, workshops, and retreats to creativity one-on-one coaching. So if you are ready to unleash your voice, break through your blocks, and confidently share your story, I cannot wait to help you birth your ideas into the world.